ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Terrible Tommy, Tom Mesker, proudly presents Lone Wolf Radio. Tom's daily broadcast emanates deep from within the confines of a newly reinforced bunker, veiled, shrouded, and constructed at an undisclosed location. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another show on Lone Wolf Radio.
Yeah, here I is, Terrible Tommy, in the bunker right here in Southern California, where it's about 80-some degrees today. How about that? Boy. It is June the 6th, 2017, again. Yesterday I had it the 6th, too. Anyhow, we're ready to go. Are you ready to go, boys and girls? Well, as I told you yesterday, I'm changing this box again. Probably think I'm weird, but anyhow, it had to do with convenience and problems along those lines. So the new and official P.O. Box address is Tom Metzger, P.O. Box 1687, and that's 315 East Esplanade Avenue, Esplanade Avenue, San Jacinto, California, 92581. I know I surprised you people, a lot of people, when I pulled up stakes out of the Midwest, which sounded like a great deal when I went back there where I was born and raised. But it's not what it's cracked up to be. Either weather or the political consciousness of the people is pretty bad. And we've got a lot of mestizos moving in there from Chicago, because most of the mestizos go up to Chicago and then they disperse from there. And also the blacks and the gangs moving into northern Indiana pretty bad. So you're not gaining much by being in the Midwest like we thought we would. Plus the weather and so forth. So and also, I have 6 grown adult children and 9 grandchildren. And it's too expensive to fly them all back to Indiana to see Pop. So it's easier for me to come out here where they live. Now, if you sent your donation in the last week or so to the old address, to the other one here in San Jacinto, don't worry about it. We're going to keep that box open for a reasonable amount of time, probably a couple of months, just because it's paid up, and then any stragglers that come in are going to get through with their mail. And that also calls for us needing to get more donations in. I don't ask for money very much, but we do need donations. Now, a lot of you guys are great, no problem at all, but some have slipped away and gone back into the old right wing. I know sometimes maybe some of my stuff is a little harsh or maybe a little boring for these people that are used to right-wing pablum passed on to them. You know, you can get Alex Jones and all these guys and some of the so-called more racial websites and all that. You can get a lot of that for free. But my opinion is you're going to get the straight scoop and the shoot-from-the-hip situation from Lone Wolf, not from these right-wing outfits. So keep the donations coming, and let's get some more subscriptions, because we do have a certain amount of expenses here, and the website and so forth. So if worse comes to worse, it could be bad if donations drop too far. So a word of the wise be sufficient. Well, today is D-Day, that horrible disaster that killed thousands of white troops on both sides in World War II. Another fratricidal war. And they're out there celebrating it today. I guess they're celebrating making the landing and killing a lot of Germans. We always delight in killing white people. That's a favorite pastime of these so-called patriotic white Americans. kill each other, that's going to solve the race problem. If the blacks whine, you kill whites. Yeah. Well, anyhow, I'm going to go back to an interesting time in our history, but about that time. This is going to be turning the bones on Madagascar. A lot of you people probably never heard of Madagascar, but it's an island over there and in the Mediterranean, East Mediterranean. And Alan Callahan, back in 1993, wrote a very good article about it, and I'm going to pass it along to you today. Why not? You got nothing else to do. Most people know very little about Madagascar. Fewer yet know that Uncle Adolf hoped to settle European Jews there. It is a very large and interesting island. White snakes and black geese are found there, along with white-necked crows and fireflies that give off a green light. There's fireflies like that in the Midwest, too. The white snakes are slender and get up to 4 feet long and are found nowhere else on the earth. There is no poisonous snakes on the island. Madagascar is also the home of a plethora of other creatures. Up until recent centuries, a giant bird called the Sepairinus, I butchered that name, meaning high bird, lived on Madagascar, which was far taller than any ostrich. They attained a height of 14 feet, laid eggs up to 14 inches long, whose shells could hold six times as much as an ostrich egg, or as much as 12 dozen hen's eggs. It is thought that the last of the high birds died more than 250 years ago. A half century or so back, a report stated that the eggs of the Sepairinus could still sometimes be found by natives who searched for them. Madagascar may be better known to the younger generation as the Malagasy Republic or the Democratic Republic of Madagascar. It is 980 miles long and 360 miles wide at its widest part. At around 226,000 square miles, it is the fourth largest island in the world. Plenty roomy to have settled the Jews on, and not overpopulate either. The native inhabitants are a mongrelized mix. It is thought that the people of Polynesia stock first came to eastern Africa, partly mixed with the Bantus and to a certain extent the Arabs also. They then migrated to Madagascar sometime between the 1st and the 10th century AD, arriving on the large and fertile island. A large portion of the purest Polynesian stock settled in the highlands in the central part. Holland, Belgium, Germany, England, to name a few, are far more densely populated than Madagascar. In fact, compared to them, Madagascar is vastly underpopulated. Yet they are light years ahead of the Malagasy natives as far as high culture is concerned. The type of people makes the difference. Conditions on Madagascar are causing some very deep furrows and some very high brows. There are plans to try to save some of the most threatened animals and the birds. The plowshare tortoises were saved when there were only 30 of them left on the island. Various other creatures will probably also be snatched from the brink. But it looks like many will die out in the next century unless things change. Whites living on the island are, of course, worried and want to help, but their small numbers make them only a speck on the colored population. Whites from other countries will have the most leverage, but without the cooperation of the Madagascar natives, it doesn't look like things can ever really turn around. With the average income only $200 a year, the poverty is desperate. The forests have been reduced to groves along the coast and some on the mountain slopes. The erosion goes on apace. More and more plants and animals are threatened. But the Malagasy themselves are not concerned about their island's future. They think that all they have to do is dig up the bones of their ancestors occasionally, turn them, and all will be well. This will take care of the severe forest destruction, the erosion, and everything else. No need to worry. It looks like the Bantu Arab Polynesian mix did not turn out a hybrid that is very good at thinking. The blood of the darker Bantu people overwhelmed the blood of the other two lighter-skinned subraces. This is always the way things work out. The Bantus are the most primitive of the three, and the more primitive genes are also dominant. The geographical separation from the African stock preserved some of the Polynesians' blood until about 400 years ago, when integration and mongrelization set in earnest. The dark descendants are called the Malagasy. Their religion is a kind of fetishism with a peculiar feature. This is to dig up the bones of their ancestors from time to time and turn them. This is supposed to take care of all their problems. And problems they have aplenty. Originally, a dense belt of forest averaging 15 to 20 miles wide passed around the whole island, but much of this has been cut down. At the present rate of destruction, it is predicted that the forest will be gone in 30 to 40 years. But Malagasy have a saying that the forest, like true love, will last forever. Erosion is another problem they either cannot or will not get a handle on. From space, a red ring around the whole island is visible from the countless tons of soil that wash into the sea. At one time, the native fishermen used to somewhat European-type schooner, but extensive sanctions of the rivers are silted up so bad now that more and more of these schooners are sitting high and dry on the mud flats, and the fishermen are reverting to the same small-type skiffs and rowboats that their ancestors used generations ago. Annexed by France in 1896, many thought the island had a bright future if France would colonize it, and the native population was much smaller then. Some French colonists did come, plus some other Europeans, Chinese, and Indian settlers, but there were not nearly enough to offset the lopsided weight of the Malagasy population. There was still room for a lot more people, though. In 1940, the short war between Germany and France ended in June of that year, with Germany the victor. Hitler was keen to find a homeland for Europeans, Jews, somewhere, and Madagascar seemed like the best. Some of God's will were willing to go, but the main Zionist leaders wanted Palestine, claiming that their ancestors had lived there, even though most of them were Khazars who had never lived in Israel or Palestine at all. Hitler, however, must have felt that a Jewish homeland carved out of the Arab territory in Palestine would have caused too much trouble with the Arabs, and events have more than proved him right. Hitler's plan hinged upon a favorable outcome of World War II, which of course did not happen. It seems to have been a reasonable plan, though, and had Germany won, there appears to have been no reason why the plan could not have been carried out in whole or part. It is interesting to speculate on what would have happened if most European Jews had been indeed settled in Madagascar. Would the island have been ruled by a Vichy France or Germany, or would the Jews have been allowed to rule it themselves? Some say that the Jews, with all their supposed skill at handling money, are no good at running their own country, and that the State of Israel would have been gone broke a long time ago if various other countries, and particularly the United States and former West Germany, hadn't given then into immense fortune of money, grants, loans, and reparations over the years. This may very well be true, but another possible explanation is that the Jews haven't had to shape up. With so many brainwashed and Judaized nations willing to hand over aid to them, why should they shape up? But maybe they could, if they had to. Even if they are not particularly good at running a country, they have done pretty well in agriculture in Israel, under conditions that are at least partly quite arid and harsh. So if Hitler's plan could have been carried out, the island of Madagascar would have been a lot better off today as far as farmland and forests are concerned. Well, of course, you got to remember that a whole lot of these people that founded Israel were part German. They had German blood in them. So that might answer the question of why they did pretty well at farming and agriculture. But they, of course, they'd never give credit to the German blood. It became independent from France in 1960 and was named Malagasy Republic in 1975. It was renamed the Democratic Republic of Madagascar. A January 1993 report said Madagascar now has 11 million people. Still, it isn't overpopulated compared to a lot of other countries, but it does have one of the fastest population growth rates in the world. Well, I've got bad news on that article I was just reading. There's more to it, but it's not there. George Dietz, in his senior years, got a little forgetful. He had the first two pages of that article, but the rest of it's not there. I know exactly how he felt. Now, as we all know, they decided not to use Madagascar to repopulate the Jews, so it all went down the tube. Something that could have... And also, I think it was Liberia, not Liberia, but one of the African countries there that had been offered to the Jews for them, Ghana or one of those countries, and they refused that because they wanted Palestine. They had to have Palestine. I mean, from that alone, I would have said, well, you're not getting anything if you don't take Madagascar or this African country. You're not going to get anything, you sniveling bastards. Well, let's skip to this one, entitled We the Aryans, reprinted from the Talon, published by the Euro-American Alliance in Milwaukee. Major Clerken, he's long dead now. This is from 1984. We are the Aryans. We have built all the great civilizations of the world. Those we have not built ourselves, we have inspired. Our race have brought to the planet all of the scientific and technological advances worth noting. The look of our race is so noble that statues of Aryan heroes have become the world's great treasures. Until lately, they're starting to tear them down. Even in war, do we imprint the signature of our nobility, valor, mercy to the defeated, and loyalty towards those whom we are allied. There is no better soldier, no greater thinker, or lover of high culture, its art and its philosophy, than the Aryan. We conceive of constitutions which astound the world for their gravity and fairness. In peace and in war, the Aryan has been a leader for more than 3,000 years. Nonetheless, we are a dying race. Our birth rate is beneath 2.0 Aryan children per couple. It takes at least the birth rate of 2.0, ours is 1.6, to ensure the basic survival of the race. Our Aryan people don't seem to care whether this mighty race survives at all. Indeed, it would seem that it's all too many Aryans prefer to be last of their kind. That is the conclusive evidence of the Aryan refusal to fight back against the forces sworn to make an end to the white race. The Aryan is an individualistic sort of person. He wants to make it on his own, even though the entire anti-white world of Jews and coloreds is ganging up on him and his descendants. What hope has he? Well, things may be changing. The future of the Aryan race depends upon the awareness and danger by our youth. Did you know that all across America, in every college and university system, white students are organizing? Their organization is called the White Student Union, and together with the aid of the Honorable Tom Metzger's White Aryan Resistance War, the White Student Union is bringing the message to Aryan pride, of Aryan pride to white students everywhere across the United States and the Western nations abroad. Tom Metzger's P.O. Box 65, Fallbrook. There is now also a computer bulletin board on that line, and it gives my old phone number here. Has been a potential of White Student Union and has decided to help it grow in California. These white student unions were not started by other people. If everybody would have done it, we'd have been far ahead instead of far behind. You can help those courageous young Aryans to grow on college campuses all over this country by writing to the White Student Union, so forth and so on. If you have children in high school or college age, tell them about White Student Union. Your children need an organization such as the White Student Union. We've been saying this for nearly 9 years now. Organization will do it. The Aryan racial organization is the key to our racial salvation. It astounds us that more whites cannot or will not recognize this fact. The Jews could not have become so influential without the ADL and the American Jewish Committee. Neither would the Negroes have been made it so far in Aryan society without the NAACP. Every non-white knows that racial moves cannot be made without a minority of pressure groups. The Aryan, however, is foolish enough to think that he can go it alone. Well, he can't, and sooner or later the fact will be too evident to ignore. He will have to face the facts. Well, as far as that organization stuff goes, these other groups are highly funded by Jews and whites. It's a lot different when our side tries to organize. They don't have much money, if any money at all. Speaking of facts, we wonder how so many Aryans can fail to recognize a racial attack on all the white race. For example, the city of Milwaukee has decided to advance Negroes and other minorities over whites who have more seniority on the civil service list. And that's getting really, really bad now after several years have passed since this was written. Very, very bad. Television is totally becoming a Negro lake. Television advertising pushes miscegenation, race mixing, 24 hours a day. They're really winding up for the pitch, I'll tell you that. White workers are going to be overlooked for promotion based upon race. Forget that, now your boss is a nigger. Chief of police is a nigger. The mayor is a nigger. Yet Whitey says nothing and no complaints. That's the biggest problem with whites. The Milwaukee Police Department is forced by court order to hire minorities, promote minorities, overqualified whites, and assign Negroes to the white residential districts. That's for sure. White officers are heard grumble, but the white community says nothing. Right now, two black members of the Green Bay Packers football team have admitted to the Milwaukee Journal to have had sexual relations with white women in the basement of the Milwaukee Tavern, where the woman was employed as a go-go dancer. The woman alleges that the two black Packers players raped her after invading the dancer's dressing room. That was one week ago, and nothing whatsoever has been done about it. Well, I think it's this LeBron James, too, that they keep bragging about. I feel sure that if we dig back in the history of things, that he was almost charged with raping a woman in a hotel. And she either was pressured into quitting that charge or not, just like Bill Cosby. The two blacks haven't even been ordered to appear before the DA. What is it so odd that here we have another racial assault? By blacks against a white woman. I think in most of these cases the white women do lead these blacks on. I don't think it's just out of the blue. Whites are silent on the subject except to say that the woman probably was a slut and the Packers are good guys. We wonder if Milwaukee is unique, or is this city symptomatic of white inability to react to racial insults, slights, and assaults? It may be that the Euro-American Alliance is out of place here in Milwaukee, but that somewhere else in America, whites are ready and willing to answer the attacks of the minorities. Sorry, not, they don't. We happen to know, however, that whites are being raped and murdered all over the country in increasing numbers by Negroes or niggers and all manner of wogs. The Jews have succeeded in making the Aryan feel guilty for his expression of racial concern. Is there a limit to this silence? I'm going to end that article right there. You know what's going on. I know what's going on. And so far, there's been almost no reaction to these beasts of the field. And in the minute there is any reaction physically on the streets to these people, they're going to send a government after you. So if you're going to do anything, you've got to be very wise, clever, and quick. I say surely we're going to have to go a long way down before we climb back up, if we climb back up. But I think we should give the race a chance to show what it can do and come out swinging one of these days. Or one thing to do is cheer on anybody that's tearing down the central government of this crooked country. Because if someone else can do the dirty work for us, that's fine. Well, I see this new movie, Wonder Woman, is going big time, very super big time. Well, it must have a lot of anti-white stuff in it to be this popular. It made, what, $100 million, $200 million the first weekend? It's got to have a lot of anti-white shit in it to get that kind of publicity, for sure. So, I don't know. If you go see it, let me know what's the score. Why is she so popular, this movie so popular? Maybe she comes off as a dyke, I don't know. Well, the Jews are already bitching about this movie. Here's an article from the Jewish press. Wonder Woman is shockingly the first film in our current decade-plus superhero moment to feature a female lead. But while the film is pioneering in terms of gender representation, in others represent it, is not especially innovative. The film does include some Negro Amazons and a couple of people of color, but the headlines and characters are all white, and almost all the marketing has been centered on white people. The film may be a breakthrough for white women, but as far as women of color are concerned, it perpetuates the bleak superhero status quo. Well, let's see here. Let's see here. The whiteness of Wonder Woman doesn't seem up for debate, and yet some have decided to debate it. An argument that has been bubbling underground on the social media that Gal Gadot, who plays the title role, is actually a person of color. It was aired in full by Matthew Mueller on comicbook.com. Quote, Gal Gadot is not actually Caucasian. In fact, she's Israeli. Unquote. Mueller announces confidently. He then goes on to chastise POC critics for not recognizing her casting as a triumph for diverse representation. Mueller doesn't actually have much of an argument. He mentions a Times of Israel blog post which points to the history of Jewish oppression and waffles back and forth on whether Jews might be considered POC, but mostly Mueller just announces Gadot is an Israeli, like a magician pulling a piece of lint out of a hat and trying to convince you that it's a rabbit. Mueller can get away with this slapdash approach because race is itself such an incoherent concept. Oh yeah? Mueller argues that Caucasian equals white, as if whiteness is actually ethnicity or regional background. Well, we know that's false. Caucasian covers several non-white races. But the truth is that whiteness isn't a biological or historical truth. It's a fuzzy, culturally determined category that has fluctuated widely over time. At various historical moments and in various places, Irish people, Eastern Europeans, Southern Europeans, and of course Jews have been excluded from the category of white people. It may seem ridiculous to say that the nationality like Israeli is non-Jew, but Donald Trump is racializing the nationality of Mexicans during the 2016 campaign. Whiteness isn't formally defined logical system. It's a blunt instrument designed to enable some people to hurt others. As such, it doesn't have to be particularly elegant or well-made. Someone needs to tell this guy that Israeli is not a race. In this context, the best definition of white people is simply people who are considered white. Gadot's nationality was not a secret. She wasn't passing as something other than Israeli. Mueller is arguing that when people see Gadot as white, they are wrong. But being white is really just a matter of what people see you as. People know Gadot's background. They simply see the background as a consistent with whiteness. David Edelstein's bizarrely exotically exotic comment that Israeli women are a breed unto themselves, notwithstanding. For that matter, in Israel itself, Gadot's skin color and European background protect her from the kind of discrimination faced by Ethiopian Jews, other dark-skinned Jews, and Palestinians. Among those who see Gadot as white are the Wonder Woman filmmakers. Gadot is Jewish and Israeli, but like the Jewish Scarlett Johansson, Hollywood perceives her in terms of unspecified whiteness. In the film, Wonder Woman's mother is played by Connie Nielsen, a white Danish actor. Wonder Woman is a young woman, as a one young woman is played in a show-stealing turn by white actress Lily Aspel. Gadot got the role as Wonder Woman precisely because she is seen as an appropriate actor to play a character who has traditionally been white. So even when they're white, they're not white. In the movie itself, it's clear that the other characters perceive Wonder Woman as white. The movie sets in World War I, time when overt racism was even more acceptable than it is today. But when Wonder Woman crashes a high-level military meeting, no one utters racial slurs or questions her whiteness. They're only scandalized because of her gender. one of Steve Trevor's army buddies, played by Sade Tagamaui, discussed his experience of racial prejudice with Wonder Woman. During the discussion, he clearly does not think that she is likely to face the same discrimination. Wow. Perhaps the clearest sign that Godot is white, though, is Mueller's own argument. The fact that some groups who were once seen as non-white have become white and successful is a constant talking point for people who don't want to deal with ongoing racism. Robert Kennedy famously pointed to the success of the Irish to deflect James Baldwin's criticism of racism in the United States. The very incoherence of whiteness becomes a way to defend whiteness. Our ideology makes no sense, therefore we can't actually be oppressing you, unquote, is a ridiculous argument, but a consistently popular one. Godot is white, and that's not to say that Jews face no discrimination. On the contrary, Godot's casting illustrates the quieter, ongoing failures of Jewish representation in superhero films. As they discuss here before, Hollywood seems constitutionally incapable of casting a Jewish actor to play a Jewish hero whose Godot can be Wonder Woman only if she sets aside her Jewishness as a visible reward for assimilation. Wow. Dot is a great Wonder Woman. She brings humor, enthusiasm, and presence to the character, but her casting is not a triumph for the POC representation, and it's not really a triumph for Jewish representation. The Wonder Woman film challenges the idea that only men can be heroes, but it accepts the conventional wisdom that says to be a hero, you must disappear into whiteness. That's a message that hurts people of color, and it's a message that ultimately hurts Jews who are not themselves of color as well. Poor boy. Well, the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has appeared to confirm an Israeli report that U.S. President Donald Trump shouted at him during their meeting last month in Bethlehem. The London-based pan-Arab newspaper Al Arabi, or The New Arab, which has editions in both Arabic and English, reported on Wednesday that Abbas acknowledged the previous day during a meeting of the Palestinian Liberation Organization Executive Committee that his meeting with Trump was uncomfortable, citing unnamed sources present at the meeting. Sources told Al Arabi that Trump showed video clips, which the Palestinians claimed have been taken out of context, of Abbas admitting to inciting against Israel. Quote, "We incite and the Israelis incite," unquote, he reportedly said. Quote, "You have the CIA, ask them to examine the videos and find out how they were taken or fabricated for the purpose of incriminating Palestinians," Abbas reportedly told Trump. The original report earlier this week by Israel's Channel 2 reported that Trump accused him of being involved in promoting incitement against Israel. "You talk there about your commitment to peace, but the Israelis show me your involvement in incitement," Trump reportedly yelled at Abbas. Did you see that anywhere in the press? I didn't. Trump is showing his true colors. Well, some more rich Jews are all upset because they got a swastika painted on their garage up in northeast Colorado. The homeowners were awakened early on Friday at their home in Aurora by police after a neighbor reported the graffiti, according to CBS 4. Well, David Lane would be happy with that because that's his old stomping ground. Maybe it's the ghost of David Lane. Local police are investigating the incident as a hate crime, not just petty vandalism like it should be. Sandy and Howard Wolf told CBS 4 that they had never been targeted before because of their religion, and they did not know how the vandals knew they were Jewish. maybe it's one of your Jewish friends. They told the news channel that they had recently learned firsthand about the consequences of anti-Semitism. Quote, my husband and I took a trip to Poland and Israel last year, and we were in several concentration camps, so it really just hit hard to see that our home, such hatred. We hear about lots of things, but now it's happened here, at our house. Wolf said that since the discovery of the graffiti, she started wearing the Star of David necklace around her by a family member who lost many relatives to the Germans. How about that? One of the biggest Jewish landlords in New York City pleaded guilty on Tuesday to felony charges of grand larceny, tax fraud, and third fraud charge stemming from filing a false instrument. Steve Crowman allegedly secured $45 million in loans by inflating rental incomes and mortgage documents. Quote, I knew the documents were false, he said. Interesting. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman called Crowman a fraudster and a criminal who tried to defraud his lenders, New York Community Bank and Capital One Bank. Crowman had become notorious for his aggressive measures in forcing tenants out of rent-controlled apartments in order to fill them with tenants willing to pay significantly more, a practice he'd undertaken since he'd bought his first building in the early 90s. Quote, by the mid-2000s, he owned about 70 buildings in New York City, and his social profile had appreciated along with his portfolio, Bloomberg News reported. He and his wife Harriet sent their sons to Columbia Prep School, claiming membership in Temple Emmanuel on Fifth Avenue, and were regulars on the Upper East Side Hampton's Gala Circuit. Crowman agreed to serve 1 year at Rikers Island and pay $5 million fine. Official sentencing will be in September. Not bad for skimming and scamming and robbing people of many millions of dollars. He gets 1 year, and I bet he don't do 1 year either. Well, Portland Highway Banner blames Jews for September 11th terror. A sign blaming Jews for the September 11th attacks was hung from a pedestrian bridge over an interstate highway in Portland, Oregon. The banner sign reads, Jews did 9/11, was hung on both sides of the bridge on Sunday evening. Several people who saw the signs called the Portland Police Department to complain and cry and moan, according to the Oregon Live website. The police referred the issue to the Oregon Department of Transportation. Someone removed the signs on Monday, according to local reports. Photos of the sign already had been posted on social media. Poor Jew boy. Well, Memorial Day, the rising of George. More than I can take. Apparently I've missed Memorial Day by being on the road and I can't even read this name. I gather I should have thanked our boys for their service to the exceptional nation. I will pass. My tolerance for nauseating twaddle has diminished with the years. To begin with, our boys, so affectionately denominated, are not our boys but suckers of the ruling rich. Think not? Think again. Ending the draft, protecting the sons of the well-off from military service, and the military from anti-war movements. If you draft the money elegance of Princeton, you get resistance. Instead, the oligarchs send the expendable children of lower orders who volunteer. Further, the soldiers are not heroes but mercenary killers morally indistinguishable from hitmen for the mafia. A kid joins the military perhaps never having heard of the Pentagon's next target country, Iraq, Vietnam, Iran, Afghanistan, wherever. It doesn't matter. They're just countries. Then one day comes the orders from Washington to go kill people in the country du jour. The kid does it. He doesn't know the people he kills. who have done nothing to him and threatened neither him or the United States. If ordered, he would readily attack Switzerland or Americans. Guido and Vito, tell me the difference. Our boys are not patriots. A recruit signs up because he needs a job, or from boredom, or thinks being a soldier might get him laid in Asia, or wants college money, or to prove himself. Patriotism is an aftermarket bolt-on. It can get you free drinks in a lot of bars, especially if you have a wound. Wounds usually come from bad luck or incompetence, but you can peddle them for drinks. The public, middle class, and up does not support the troops. The majority do not serve, do not know anyone who does, and avoid soldiers as sex-crazed riffraff, which is not too far off the mark. I grew up aboard the Dahlgren Navy Proving Ground, a naval weapons development based on the Potomac in Virginia. The daughters of the mathematicians, physicists, and officers were strongly discouraged from dating sailors. They were, though, no one quite said it, dirt. Can you imagine Ivanka Trump going out with an enlisted Marine to Billy Bob's rib pit? How many of these celebrated our boys at Breitbart or National Review have been in a Legion Hall recently? Ever carried a rifle? No one know what one is? Our boys are not making sacrifices for America. They're being sacrificed, used to promote the interests of big oil, Israel, the neocons, to the extent that there is a difference. The arms industry and the imperialists, they're certainly not defending America, which is no danger at all from Iraq, Iran, Somalia, Afghanistan, or the rest. Do you wake up shuddering in fear of an attack by Yemen? Our boys do not fight because they want to, but because we force them to. If they choose not to, they're called deserters and traitors and face heavy jail time. A few men enjoy war and go back tour after tour. I know several of these, but most, given the chance to come home without penalty, they would go home yesterday. If you don't believe me, make them an offer and see what happens. American soldiers are not good guys, decent people, armed Boy Scouts promoting democracy and policing the world to rid it of evil. They start as normal lower middle class kids, yes, no worse than anyone else, but training soon brings them around. They learn how to place a bayonet in an enemy's kidneys so that the shock and agony will drop him. At least we did in Paris Island in summer of 66. They learned how to take a man's face with a vertical butt stroke. Chiefly, they lose the normal aversion to killing. All of this necessary in soldiers, our boys. The abandonment of all human decency is the soul of military culture, and a needed abandonment. A pilot bombing Baghdad knows that he is splattering people, that they have nothing to do with him or his, that he is leaving children screaming at what is left of mommy and with funny things coming out of her middle and gurgling. He knows this because it is impossible not to know what a 500-pound bomb will do, but he does it anyway. He doesn't care. If he did, he wouldn't do it. In the age of PR, the military will speak of surgical strikes, of collateral damage. Officers who are liars and politicians become angry, impressed on what they are really doing. They don't care, at least don't care enough, or they wouldn't do it. But they know that disemboweled kids play badly with the public, that you see no photographs of bleeding viscera in the media is a measure of the control of the press by those profiting from war. soldiers are evil. They don't start that way, but the military changes them. If you read military history, you will find out that from Joshua to yesterday, armies have butchered whole cities, looted, raped, burned, tortured. It is what armies do. Dresden, Hamburg, Nanjing, Hiroshima. How can you not think this evil? Having been trained to kill, they do. Seeing their friends die horribly after stepping on a mine, they come to hate the dinks, the slopes, the sand niggers, the krauts, the gooks. Revenge has a powerful appeal. Seeing a lot of mutilated corpses and cartilage glisten white produces numbness. Another dead gook, so what? It happens easy. The day I arrived at the Amtrak compound in Da Nang in 67, a VC had been killed the night before outside the wire. They brought him in. I don't know why. He was lying on the floor, apparently having taken a full magazine of 7.62, arm almost cut off with bone sewing and flies crawling on open eyes, going cloudy. Several other Marines were taking turns holding his head up by the hair for trophy photographs. So what, I thought. He was dead. It wasn't an atrocity, just guys kidding around. Our boys, me included. But atrocities happen regularly. Some can't be argued, such as Lieutenant Talley's mass killing at My Lai. Many soldiers deny what they have done or kid themselves. A pilot bombing a village because sniper rounds came out of it will see no atrocity. Militaries today have learned to be sensitive about these things. They invariably are called isolated incidents. An isolated incident is busy as usual. That has been detected by the press. Countries insist that their soldiers don't do the things every other army has done since the first human picked up a pointed stick. Germans will tell you about the clean Wehrmacht. Memorial Day. Let's hear it for the boys. And that's the end of that. That's a damn good statement. I like it. Tommy likes it. Goodbye till tomorrow, boys and girls, and we'll be back again. That'll be the 7th of June. Time to get your donations in.